Today's episode is sponsored in part by Modern Mammals, creators of a new hair washing product for men. You can help support Based on a True Story when you use the code BOATSPODCAST at modernmammals.com for 10% off. I've really been enjoying their shampoo light bar as an alternative to traditional shampoo. And I know it's in the name, but honestly, when I first used it, I was surprised at just how light and airy it feels. It reminds me of using a bar of soap for your hair, except it's even better than that because if you're like me, you don't like the residue that some actual bars of soap leave behind. And the shampoo light bar is easy to wash out without leaving any residue behind. Modern Mammals also focuses on creating products that help you keep your hair's natural oils so it's not left feeling poofy and frizzy. Go to modernmammals.com and use code BOATSPODCAST for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with promo code BOATSPODCAST. Don't forget to use the promo code BOATSPODCAST so they know I sent you. Thanks, Modern Mammals. Okay, let's start today's episode.
Four years after, author David Ebershoff released his first novel in 2000, titled The Danish Girl. Screenwriter Lucinda Coxon started working on adapting the novel into a movie. As is often the case in Hollywood, whether or not The Danish Girl would be seen on the big screen was far from a sure thing. It went through more than its fair share of changes. It started when Swedish director Thomas Alfredson, who was just coming off production on his popular vampire movie, Let the Right One In, said in 2009 he was going to work on The Danish Girl before his next project, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. But that fell through. Then another Swedish director, Lars Hallström, announced in 2010 that he was going to take over The Danish Girl. Production moved forward, and Charlize Theron was cast for the role of Gerda Wegner. Then, Charlize left and was replaced by Gwyneth Paltrow. Then, Gwyneth left, and although they never officially announced it, for some reason everyone was under the assumption that Uma Thurman would take her place. Then, that rumor changed as Marion Cotillard, who was just coming off 2010's Inception at the time, was thought to have the role of Gerda. Then, Marion was out, and reports surfaced that Rachel Weisz would play Gerda in the film. Soon after that, everything changed when both Rachel Weisz and director Lars Hallström left the project. Finally, things started to come together in 2014 when Tom Hooper, who had just finished 2012's reinterpretation of Les Miserables, was announced as the new director. Alongside this announcement came the news that Eddie Redmayne would play the lead role of Einar Wegner and Lily Elbe. A couple months later, Gerda's role was finalized when Alicia Vikander took the part. Finally, the screenplay that began in 2004 saw the film get released in January of 2016. The Danish Girl hit theaters to underwhelming numbers. The movie only cost $15 million to make, but on opening weekend, it was only shown at a total of four theaters and made less than $200,000. After months in theaters, the movie didn't even make back its original $15 million. Despite low numbers at the box office, the film was nominated for four Academy Awards, including Best Actor and Best Actress for Eddie Redmayne and Alicia Vikander, respectively. Alicia would come away with her first Oscar thanks to her terrific performance in the film. One of the contributing factors to the film's low box office numbers came from numerous criticisms of historical inaccuracies. So how does the movie stack up to the true story? I'm Dan Lefebvre, and this is Based on a True Story. The movie begins at an art exhibition for Einar Wegner, who, at the time, is one of the top landscape painters in Denmark. This is in contrast to Einar's wife, Gerda, who we learn early on in the movie paints portraits. The movie picks up in 1926 when Lily, then still known as Einar, was in her 40s and a successful artist. This backdrop for the story is true. While the movie doesn't show much of her younger years, Lily was born as Einar Wegner on December 28, 1882, on the eastern coast of Denmark in the city of Vala. Einar's love of art started as a teenager when she traveled from her hometown the 140 miles to Copenhagen, where she studied art at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts. In fact, that's where she met Gerda Gottlieb, another aspiring artist. The two loved painting together and soon fell in love with each other. Although the movie claims that the couple was only married for 6 years, that's not true. The couple was actually married in 1904 when Einar was 22 and Gerda was only 19. Since the movie starts in 1926, they'd already been married for 22 years by the time the movie starts. Gerda had moved to Copenhagen herself from the small Danish town of Hammelev, about 125 miles from Copenhagen, but only 90 miles north of Einar's hometown of Vella. Although many at the time considered Einar to be the better of the two artists, Gerda's work began to get noticed as well, and shortly after their marriage, she began showing her own work in galleries. We don't really know if the influence from Einar's popularity helped Gerda launching her career, but she did win her own contest, a sketching contest, in the Danish newspaper Politiken in 1907. And it was because of this contest that hurtled Gerda into a career of illustrating for fashion magazines. Before long, Gerda found her niche and became well known in the fashion industry for her Art Deco style paintings in books and magazines such as La Vie Parisienne and Vogue. Her work featured a variety of beautiful women dressed in fashion-forward clothing.
As I'm recording this right now, on the other side of my door is my cat. He's always wherever I am as I'm working on the podcast. He watches all the movies with me, and he lets me know when it's time to stop working by sitting on my keyboard. I love the little guy. And as a pet owner, that means there are expenses like vet bills that can pop up, and sometimes that's unexpected. That's why I was happy to learn about today's sponsor, EarnIn, because they can help make sure that I've got the money to cover those unexpected vet bills. EarnIn is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Now you can join over 3.5 million customers. Get the peace of mind that comes with EarnIn. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in True Story under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. True Story under podcast. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Thanks, EarnIn.
In the movie, there's a scene where Gerda, who's played by Alicia Vikander, is working on a portrait, but her model, an actress by the name of Ulla Paulsen, who's played by Amber Heard in the film, is nowhere to be found. Gerda asks Einar, who's played by Eddie Redmayne, to dress up in stockings and shoes so she can finish part of the drawing. According to Gerda, Ulla canceled because she has an extra rehearsal, but she insists Einar dress up since she's so behind, and she tries to finish the painting. Finally, Einar capitulates and puts them on. Then another pivotal moment in the movie is a few minutes later when Ulla shows up and hands her the flowers that she's carrying, a lily, and suggests that that be her name. Much of this is actually true, although there are some significant differences between the movie and the true story here. While it's true that the first time Einar dressed up as a woman was by chance, the character Ulla Paulsen in the movie isn't a real person, and was actually based on a person named Anna Larsen, who was an actress who modeled for Gerda's paintings. But the truth is, we don't really know why Anna couldn't make the session. All we know is that she couldn't, and Einar dressed up instead. So while the first time did happen by chance, the biggest difference between the movie and the true story really is the timing, or the timeline. In the movie, this took place in 1926, while in reality, Goethe started her career painting fashion shortly after winning the newspaper contest in 1907. So most historians believe that the first time Einar dressed up was about a year later, in 1908, and not the 20 years later, as the film seems to imply. And yes, it was Anna who suggested the name Lily. The movie tells the story of the first public appearance for Lily, an artist ball hosted by Ulla. But Einar doesn't want to attend for fear that people will make a big deal out of her attending. She was, after all, considered one of the best landscape artists in Denmark. Remembering just a few days before when she dressed up for her painting, Goethe suggests that she go in disguise as Lily. While at the party, Lily kisses Henrik, who's played by Ben Whishaw, something that Goethe walks in on. And here, according to the movie, is a pivotal moment where Einar starts to realize she's a woman trapped in a man's body. It was Lily who wanted to kiss Henrik, not Einar. Goethe says that they were just playing a game and Einar needs to stop. While there's no documentation to back up any of this at the party, it's not really likely to have been an actual event. The character of Henrik never existed in real life, is one that was made up by the author of the novel that the movie is based on. In fact, the book's author, David Ebershoff, as you remember, readily admits that while his book, also called The Danish Girl, was inspired by Lily's life, it doesn't try to tell a true story. It only tries to tell a good story. And there's a lot more that's been fictionalized for the film, like the scene where Goethe meets with an art collector who suggests they move to France for her career. That's not what happened. So what actually happened? After Lily made her first appearance, by chance, Goethe continued to use Lily as the model of her paintings. While the party in the movie was fictionalized, it is based on the fact that Goethe would attend artist balls and events together. Although Lily was not introduced as Einar's cousin like she was in the movie, but rather as Einar's sister. And while Henrik was not a real character, Lily did flirt with men at those events, so it's likely that the author just combined all of these different events into a single one to get the gist across. Although none of them continued on as a relationship like they did with Henrik in the movie. While we don't really know what Goethe's initial reactions to Lily were, she was the one who encouraged Lily. It's impossible for us to know what her reasons were for this encouragement. Most of this was actually fictionalized for the film, but there's a few reasons that historians have speculated. The first of these is that Goethe was a lesbian, but there's never been any proof of this. And actually, after Goethe and Einar were separated, Goethe would go on to marry another man later in life. Another possible motivation for Goethe's encouragement of Einar's transition into Lily could have been for her own career. The art community loved the subject of Goethe's paintings, and, by extension, Goethe's career started to rise. As it did, Lily spent more and more time being a model for Goethe's paintings. As a result, Einar's career as an artist started to wane as she spent less time painting. But all of that would change. Now there's another major timeline issue in the movie here, as it shows the couple moving to Paris toward the end of the film. In truth, once the news broke that the model for Goethe's popular paintings of women in high fashion were, in fact, paintings of her husband, it was a scandal that proved to be too much for Copenhagen. But the most likely reason for Goethe's encouragement of Lily is because of her apparent belief that she created Lily. In Lily's autobiography, Man into Woman, she quotes Goethe, quote, "In recent months, I have felt prickings of conscience because I was, to a certain extent, the cause of creating Lily, of enticing her out of you, and thus becoming responsible for a disharmony in you which reveals itself most distinctly on those days when Lily does not appear," end quote. Regardless, after the scandal in Copenhagen, the couple felt pressure to leave. The movie makes it seem like they went straight to Paris, but in truth, the couple traveled around Europe as they tried to find a place more open-minded, visiting Italy and France before finally settling down in Paris. This happened in 1912, before the timeline of the movie even began. In Paris, they could live openly as lesbians without fear. After moving to Paris, Goethe started to relish the popularity as her fame blossomed. She continued painting for high fashion magazines and started painting nude women, usually in very sexual or risque poses. Her work became popular in some very controversial exhibitions, even in the open-minded Paris. There were even a few small riots thanks to the openly lesbian themes in her paintings. But Goethe loved the controversy. It only garnered her more fame. She began throwing crazy parties at her studio in Paris. And through it all, Goethe seemed to be thoroughly supportive of Lily. If anything, she was the only one who supported Lily through everything. Now, the movie's ending is very different than the true story. In the movie, Einar meets with a Professor Varnacross who informs her that he can perform a gender reassignment surgery. It is highly dangerous and consists of multiple surgeries. When asked for a last name, Lily gives the name Elbe, like the river. This is followed by a scene after the surgery when Lily is walking through a park in France and two men beat her up. After this, Lily wants to finish the gender reassignment right away, even though Goethe feels it's too soon. It's after this surgery when things start to go downhill, implying that Lily had the second surgery too soon. And then the movie ends on a very sad note as Lily passes away, devastating Goethe. Perhaps the only common thread between this and what actually happened is the innate sadness that ripples through both stories. To begin, Lily's name was officially Lily Isle Elvinus. The surname of Elbe was actually made up by a journalist in Copenhagen. By the time 1930 rolled around, we know from Lily's autobiography that she was tormented, no doubt ravished by mockery and ridicule at the time. She had decided that she would kill herself. We don't really know why, but she set the date of her suicide as May 1st, 1930. However, Lily changed her mind when she found out about a doctor in Berlin who could perform a gender reassignment surgery. So she went to Berlin in February of 1930, and with the hope that Lily could fully become the woman she was, she decided to undergo the surgeries instead of committing suicide. In the movie, there's two surgeries, but in truth, there were four surgeries. While the movie depicts all of the surgeries being done by Professor Varnacross, in truth, there's conflicting reports about this. Some indicate that only the first was performed by Dr. Varnacross, like in the movie, with the rest of the surgeries being done by a Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld. Others indicate it was Dr. Hirschfeld who did the first, with Varnacross doing the rest. Still other reports indicate that it was a Dr. Erwin Gorbent, or maybe it was Dr. Ludwig Levi Lentz who performed the initial surgeries with Varnacross, who was a member of the Nazi Party, taking over for the latter surgeries after the Nazis began to rise in Germany. Another aspect that wasn't covered in the movie was the possibility that Lily may have been intersex. She may have already had ovaries before any of her surgeries. This came up in some of the reports from Dr. Hirschfeld's German Institute for Sexual Science in Berlin, which was the location for all of the surgeries. In the end, we don't really know who performed the surgeries. Most of this fog around Lily's medical history is because the German Institute for Sexual Science had their records burned by Nazi students as a protest to the institute in 1933. Then, during World War II in 1945, Allied bombings would destroy most of the building. Unfortunately, this means we'll probably never know the full truth. The movie doesn't mention this, but Lily and Goethe were divorced on October 6, 1930. This happened after the first of Lily's surgeries, and as she started to reject her former life as Einar. Lily wasn't a painter, as Einar was. She applied for and was granted a passport with her new name. It was her first official documentation as Lily. She would go on to date a man named Claude Lejeune, someone that she hoped to marry and start a family with, but to do this, she would have to be able to bear children. So, in September of 1931, Lily underwent another surgery, this time to transplant a uterus. In one of her last letters to her sister, she wrote, quote, "Now I know that death is near. Last night I dreamt about Mother. She took me in her arms and called me Lily, and Father was there also." End quote. Lily Al Elvinus died on September 13, 1931, after her body rejected the uterus. Unfortunately, the medical technology of the time simply could not successfully perform such a highly experimental surgery. While her death was cloaked in sadness, her life was one that shone as a testament as someone who lived life to its fullest extent, despite what others may think. A few months before she passed away, Lily wrote a letter to one of her friends that reflected on her life. "That I, Lily, am vital and have a right to life, I have proved by living for 14 months. It may be said that 14 months are not much, but they seem to me like a whole and happy human life." This episode of Based on a True Story was written and produced by me, Dan Lefebvre. The movie may not have been entirely accurate. In fact, most of it was made up for the book and film as they condensed the duration of Lily's life into the few final years. Sadly, we don't know the entirety of the true story thanks to the lost records over the years. Still, the Danish girl did a great job of bringing Lily's life to the forefront of our minds, remembering someone who simply wanted to live a happy life. After Lily's death, one of her friends, Niels Hoyer, collected her diaries and turned them into what we now know as Lily's autobiography, called Man into Woman, an authentic record of a change of sex. It was published in 1933, and I would highly recommend this to anyone who wants to learn more about Lily's life. Thanks for listening to Based on a True Story. You can find the show's home on the web, basedonatruestorypodcast.com, or if you have thoughts on the show, join in the discussion on Facebook, and also at Based on a True Story Podcast. If you want to show your support for the show, you can do that by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, or you can become a patron of the show to get behind-the-scenes access over at patreon.com/basedonatruestorypodcast. Thanks for listening.